cliffcentral.com. Up, down, left, right, up,
down, left. Sing it, take it, take it, take it. Yeah. Hey! Cool boos. I'm changing the words. Kulubuse is going to become Kulubuse. That's right. Ding, 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 ding. See, I found the song for me yesterday. How's it go?
Kulubuse, Kulubuse.
Nuh-uh.
Oh, no, I'm wrong. Kulubuse.
Kulubuse.
You know, I'm just getting visuals of Kulubuse on the dance floor of the weekend.
Right. Now, I don't know if you know this story. Let me fill you in. Kulubuse Zuma fell down on the dance floor, as reported in the Sunday Sun this weekend. It was a front page story. And the front page story read, Zuma's nephew dances to the beat of his favorite music, but then all fall down. Hey, Kulubuse. So on the line, we have Kulubuse's publicist, Nosbekengeshe Dlamini Nkosi. That's right, she's on the line, and we're going to speak to her about what actually happened. Get her on here. Good morning, Nosbekengeshe. How are you?
Hi, man, I'm okay. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Nosbekengeshe, how many people were actually there when this whole thing happened?
Oh, it was a rather big gathering, you know. We had a Maskandi star, so it was quite a sizable gathering of proud supporters of Maskandi music.
Oh, very good. What happened to Kulu?
You know, media is known to exaggerate. We all know that Kulu is a huge fan of Maskandi music.
Yes.
And this was his favorite group, in fact.
Yes.
A groupie.
Yes, he's
and,
a groupie.
And, well, what happened, quite simply, is that he was doing the traditional Zulu dance. And we've all seen that it always ends with the falling.
Mm.
So it was not an accidental fall. So we want to actually state categorically that the claims that the Ugwinya, the first cook that he was saving for later, fell out of his back pocket and he slipped on it. It's completely untrue. We completely deny that. It was just part of the traditional Zulu dance to fall on your ass when you dance.
Oh.
And we did warn him against it, but you know, once the spirit of Shaka moves you, yes.
Now, how many people had to lift Kulu up after he fell?
Oh, well, Kulu only needed the help of 6 men. 4 are recovering well after putting their backs out. And the guy who was controlling the forklift wasn't laughing at Kulu. It was a nervous response to the situation. Yes.
Sure. Did he break anything?
Yes, me. sorry. Yeah, he broke Twitter. His lollipop, which was in his back pocket, that we can confirm. We believe that the floor already had a crack in the shape of an enormous rotund buttock before he fell. So we deny any fault there. We're still fighting that case. And the backs of those guys who were lifting him up were already weak. I mean, honestly, we cannot be held responsible for how, you know, people's health. As for Kulu, well, his ego was slightly bruised, but it was only because he couldn't finish his dance. But yeah, that's about it.
And are there any damages? I mean, is there any cost now to the venue at which this whole incident occurred?
Like we said, that crack in the floor, we are convinced that had nothing to do with us. We found it there already.
Okay.
But all I'm allowed to say is that it was just a drop in the ocean in terms of cost for our Kulu. He will also be covering the therapy for the clearly traumatized man. You know, the man pictured sitting in a fetal position, doing nothing as Kulu is being helped up by the first group of men. Yes. Oh,
sure.
Please hold. Sorry.
Oh.
Yes. Just. We'll just put them, all 4 of them there. Just put them next to each other.
What's going on?
No, I'm afraid I have to go. Kulu's buffet has just been loaded and
right.
He needs to eat.
All right.
I'm afraid that's all I can give
all right.
you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your concern. We will
thank
let
you.
Him know you're worried.
Thank you. Nosbekengeshe. Thank you very much.
Yeah. If you can send those Krispy Kreme donuts via fast mail for
all
him.
All right. Thank you very much.
Much
thank you. Thanks. Nosbekengeshe. Very nice. So, yeah. Kulubuse Zuma. Everything's okay now. Everybody seems to have made it.
Yeah.
Aren't we happy?
He just brought a whole new spin to getting down, though.
Well, you know what? Things happen. Mm. I've fallen in the dance floor before. I did. I hurt my elbow. Don't laugh, Sia.
This is serious.
No, it's very serious. It's a hugely serious situation. Okay, lots of other stuff going on in the news. So, where do we begin? Should we let Mubs start or should I start? No. This is quite funny, Mubs. I think you'll like this. You know in Holland, you know what they call a cat in Holland?
Cat.
Poes.
Yeah, correct. Right, so, listen to this. A bunch of school kids. And the teacher's busy teaching them about the word poes. All right? And then she makes them spell it, and then they have to write it down.
De poes ligt te slapen op de bank. Hak en plak, poes. Schrijf op poes.
Isn't that fantastic? It made me laugh, and then I looked up... I looked up a bunch of other clips. There's a show called Hopla, which is about a bunny rabbit. It's an animated show in Holland. And the bunny rabbit loses his cat. And this episode is called Waar is Poes?
Het is een warme dag. De zon schijnt en Hopla zit in de tuin.
By the way, how much of this can you actually translate if you have any understanding of Afrikaans? I got like 90% of it.
Het is een warme dag. De zon schijnt en Hopla zit in de tuin.
So it's a warm day. The sun shines and Hopla is sitting in the garden.
Hij leest een mooi boek. Poes heeft het ook warm.
He's reading a book, and Poes is also very hot.
Ze ligt onder de boom in de schaduw.
She lies under the tree in the shade. See, I'm getting this. My Dutch is not bad.
Mauw, zegt Poes, en ze staat recht. Mauw, mauw. Ze komt bij de stoel van Hopla. Mauw, mauw. Wat is er, Poes? Vraagt Hopla. Vind je te warm? Mauw, zegt Poes.
So basically the cat's hot.
Yep.
You got it? Are we following so far?
Yeah.
The cat is hot and the rabbit's asking him if he wants something to drink.
Heb je dorst?
Heb je dorst?
Dan zal ik je wat water brengen. Hopla gaat naar binnen om water te halen. Als hij terugkomt, is Poes nergens te zien.
All right, so he goes into the house to get the water for Poes, who's too hot. And... then he comes out and Poes is gone. Waar is Poes?
Poes, Poes, roept Hopla. Kom Poes, ik heb fris water voor je.
I've got fresh water
maar
for Poes
you. Komt niet.
Oh.
Ach, denkt Hopla, ze zal zo wel komen.
He'll
Hopla leest
come.
Verder in zijn boek.
Yeah.
Af en toe kijkt hij eens op om te zien of Poes er nog niet is.
Stond er Poes?
Poes komt niet. Dan is het etenstijd. Hopla gaat naar binnen. Ik laat de deur open. Dan kan Poes binnenkomen.
So, the rabbit goes into the house but leaves the door open so that Poes can come inside in case Poes comes back. Got it? Are you still following, Sia?
I'm following the Poes.
All right, now, here's where it gets a little complicated. Because the rabbit goes to sleep, but he's dreaming about Poes. Now, I think that the person who wrote this is trying to get some other... second level message in here. You tell me if you think I'm being super sensitive, but take a listen. Alright, are you ready?
Aan tafel voelt Hopla zich raar omdat Poes er niet is. Na het eten lummelt hij nog wat rond tot het donker wordt en het tijd is om te slapen.
Okay, sleep time.
Hopla gaat nog even buiten kijken of Poes er niet is. Poes, Poes, roept Hopla. Maar Poes laat zich nog steeds niet zien. Verdrietig gaat Hopla naar bed. Hij raakt maar niet in slaap. Hij denkt aldoor aan Poes.
So, a lot of guys go to sleep at night and they wonder about where Poes is.
It's like a day in my life, this story.
Exactly.
Het is al laat als Hopla eindelijk indommelt.
So eventually goes to sleep.
De volgende morgen is Hopla vroeg wakker. Het eerste waar hij aan denkt is Poes. Vlug gaat hij buiten kijken. Maar... er is geen Poes.
Anyway, you get the basic idea. There's no Poes. Poes is gone.
Poes is hot.
You know, in this country, you can't use that word, right? In Holland, it's just calling your cat. Poes. Poes. And kids are taught at a very young age to say,
"Poos."
Right. Very good.
How old are we again?
There we go. We're children. Are you kidding? What, you came here because you thought you'd get something smart? No, for that you'd have to wait for my buddy. And luckily for you, she's here. And she's got some news for us. So shall we find out what's going on in the news for this morning? I don't see why not. Here is Mabale Moloi with the latest in the news. Do you want your special trumpet noise, Mubs? The one that you've grown to love?
Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, don't be enthusiastic. If you don't want it, I can find you another one.
I mean, play whatever you want.
All right. Here's the news. There we go. What do you got?
How do you feel about elderly drivers?
Oh,
petrified.
Because more than a million drivers in Britain aged over 65 refuse to admit that they are a danger behind the wheel, thus risking fines for failing to disclose serious medical conditions that would legally prohibit them from driving. And of course, this can be applied here as well.
Yeah.
So, do we want elderly people to stop driving at a certain age? And what is that age? Because in Britain, elderly drivers fail to disclose certain medical ailments that they suffer from, such as visual impairments, which is a problem when you're behind the wheel.
Big time.
Diabetes, heart conditions, epilepsy, which, you know, can also be a problem. There is actually a case of a 73-year-old man called Peter Conroy, mm-hmm. who was partially blind. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison back in 2014.
Wow.
After hitting two women on a pedestrian crossing. Now, he killed one.
Yo.
And injured the other. So how do we feel about the elderly behind the wheel? I often hear a lot of people bragging about how, you know, my grandfather is 80-something years old, and he still drives. And my question is,
he shouldn't.
Should he still be driving?
Absolutely. He should not.
And at what age, then, do we say that elderly people should not drive? Because we're all going to get there. At once upon a time, you were a learner driver. You irritated everyone. And in the near future, you're going to be an elderly person. It happens to all of us.
Yeah.
I think it's almost down to the doctors. If you're going for a checkup, and you can't go to the toilet by yourself anymore, then they go, "Well, Mr. Stibbs, you just pissed your pants the third time this week. I'm going to have to take away your driver's license, as is the law nowadays." Or if you go in for an operation and it's like, oh gosh, you're going to be in a catheter bag for like the rest of your life and you got a stick, then they should be able to take your driver's license away.
Yeah, because...
They're not going to own up and go down to the local Department of Motor Vehicles or whatever and say, "Look, I'm in a poor way."
Yeah, because what happens when you fail your eye test? Do they then say, "Oh, well, that's it. You're cut off. That's it. You're done." Yeah,
that's exactly what should happen. Because if you go to an optometrist and you do something bad, they go, "Look, sorry. That's it. Off the road."
Look, I just don't want... let me be fair. I mean, in this country, you could buy a license. So a lot of these old people will probably just buy a license, even if you make it a rule that they can't. You know, they will. And they need to get around. Public transport's up to shit, so what are they going to do?
Yeah, and a lot of old people feel like, you know, I've lived my whole life and no young upstart is going to tell me what to do. And they just go ahead and do what they want to do anyway.
What if you get like an age breathalyzer? You blow into something, it's like, "Oh, 87. No, that's it. Give me the keys. Way too old."
I don't know. Old people, you know what? There is old and there's old. I know a lot of 80-year-olds who are more than capable.
That's true. I mean, Mr. Gary Player will be driving till he's 100.
That's it.
And he'll be in a car as well.
And he'll be doing one-arm push-ups every morning. But that's Gary Player. He's superhuman.
Very few people.
Not sure. They're not a lot that can do
this. Even half of him.
You see, I think there's a foolproof way to test this out.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you take more than 15 minutes to get into your car, I think you shouldn't be able to drive. Have you seen that?
So true, sir.
Yeah. It is the best thing. Just go to a shopping center and watch an old person
try to get
into the car.
But I really think that if you're in your 90s and you're still okay, I mean, Bob Mugabe's running a country at 90.
And he's 92.
Are we really going to give other old people shit about driving a car? Really?
Well, in the UK, Gareth, apparently a lot of these elderly drivers believe that their condition doesn't affect their driving. But I mean, these are people who turn out to have the likes of epilepsy and also have visual impairments. But they think, no, I'm perfectly fine to carry on driving. So the question is, who then gets to decide that you're not fine to carry on driving?
When was the last time you were in traffic with a really old person and what happened?
The street that I live on, there's an old age home there. Oh, so every time, every time I get stuck behind an elderly driver, I'm patient about it now. Because what am I going to do?
No. Yeah, yeah. I don't know that the answer is to this thing. A lot of people are commenting here. I just want to read a couple of these messages. Why did Mabali attempt to play her own intro tune on the trumpet? It sounds bad, Mabali. You need practice.
Who says this?
That's Cyphered.
Cyphered, I happen to think that I'm a very talented individual, and I just wanted to share my talents.
Yes, and who are you to tell her she can't? How dare you? Mike says, imagine being told you have cancer or killer diabetes and then being told you're losing your license. That's just mean. Yeah. That Kulu thing, according to Carl, was hilarious. Well, I hope he's okay. And apparently Supernova says there's no chance that that is Kulu's spokesperson. She does not breathe heavily. Robert says, hey, Gareth, thought you might be interested to know that you can even listen to Cliff Central on the beach in KZN. Oh, nice for you.
Mm.
Jermaine says, forgive my ignorance, but in the age that we live in, why are we not all trading in the same currency? And what kind of impact would occur if it did? I'll ask Anthea. That's a good question. Question for Ben about FIFA. How the hell do you think a non-profit would list, Ben? What a stupid question.
Yeah, but they're not a non-profit. That's just it. That's the whole thing.
All right. Supernova says, morning, Gareth. Two questions. Where is Bladen Zimande and why the hell is he not sorting out the protests? It's his job. And secondly, why do you have to use WeChat? Is it an investor? Remember when we started Cliff Central, one of the reasons that we felt confident to start it on such a big scale was because WeChat came in as an early sponsor. They're not an investor, they're a sponsor, and they were for the first 6 months of our existence. No longer, but we continue to use WeChat because a lot of people like you, Supernova, who just messaged on WeChat, like to use the app. There are just options. You know, if something had to go wrong with our app, you could listen on WeChat. If something goes wrong on WeChat, you could listen on our app. And both work and both have different functions. So it all happens the right way. Now, we're talking about old people. There's a 106-year-old woman who met President Obama and Michelle at the White House. This woman is so excited and so energetic. This is what I say about old age being just a number. You know, you could be 106 and you could be this woman.
Virginia McLaurin?
Hey!
How are you? You want to say hi to Michelle?
Yes!
Slow down, man.
She's jumping all over the place.
You are not.
You gotta slow down.
Oh, my goodness. I want to be like you.
Dancing? Come on. So what's the secret to still dancing at 106?
106. You can't really hear what's happening, but that's her laughing. Talk about an inspiring woman. I mean, 106 years old, she's got more energy than a lot of 20-year-olds I know.
Huh? Yeah.
Come on.
We're so happy to have you here.
And look at those nails.
Those
nails. Yes, sir. I thought I would never live to get in the White House.
Well, you are right here.
And I tell you.
I mean, this woman probably grew up during slavery. She's 106 years old. I mean, it's a long time, right? And now she's in the White House with the first black president of the United States. I think that's a great story. And she's so happy to be there.
Whoa.
Yeah, 106.
Was born in 1910.
That's it. I mean, it was before World War I. Think about that. Now, there's her, okay? Contrast her with this 110-year-old woman who this interviewer tries to ask a few questions of. 110. And listen to how crotchety and grumpy this old lady is. So here's the television interviewer who's one of those, you know, those TV poppies. She's not really their main anchor woman. She kind of does, I don't know, 2 in the morning or whatever. And she's interviewing this 110-year-old woman.
Good. Good morning. Yes, we are out here at the Cheney Care Center, and I am sitting next to...
You can imagine how excited she is for this, you know? Everybody else gets to cover a war zone or whatever, and she's at the Cheney Old Ladies Care Center.
Cheney Care Center, and I am sitting next to the woman on the front page of the Spokesman Review this morning. This is Flossie Dickey, and check it out.
Flossie Dickey. Okay. All right.
Well, folks, we got her very own Good Day Spokane coffee mug. She is enjoying some coffee this morning.
She's not enjoying shit. Watch. Listen to her.
Because, Flossie, you say you're a little tired this morning. Is that right?
I am tired.
She is...
how's that? I am... She just wants this reporter out of her goddamn place.
Tired this morning, is that right?
I am tired.
She is very tired. That's actually, I heard, your favorite activity to do at the center here is to take a little nap.
Well, she's 100...
She can nap many times as I can.
As many times as she can, she likes to take a nap.
And now, this reporter's going to have to start digging deep soon because this old lady doesn't want to talk to her. She just ignores her most of the time. And she's, so far what we've learned is, her favorite activity, Ben?
Taking naps, Gareth.
Flossie has 3 children. You have 12 grandchildren, 20 great-grandchildren, and 15 great-great-grandchildren.
Jeez.
You sound like a very busy lady.
No response.
Yes, she has lived in multiple places in the Northwest, even lived in Arizona. She's originally from Oregon. That's where she was born. And Flossie, this morning, we also have some flowers that we would like to give you. She got her nails done. I don't know if you can see, but they're a beautiful pink. Pink and purple, we heard, were your favorite colors. So I'm just going to set those on your lap for you. And
we're losing her.
It won't stay.
I'll hold them. How about that? So that they stay. Later today, Flossie's family is going to be coming out here to throw you a big birthday party.
Listen.
Are you excited for your party?
Not one bit.
What would you rather? You would rather be taking a nap, huh?
Oh my goodness.
Nicole!
Anyway, I'm here with Chris Barr. Chris, you have known Flossie. Come on in here.
Okay, now you think, okay, because this guy knows her, maybe she'll respond a little better. So far, this old lady's been no help at all.
Yes?
Well, I know there's a bit of a delay here, but stay with me. Can
Matt,
you ask,
were you going to say something?
Can you ask Flossie, 110, obviously she knows a few secrets here. What is the key to live that long?
Not talking to irritating reporters is probably how she got to this age. No response.
Yes, I've been trying to get that out of her. Flossie, the people on TV want to know what the secret is to being able to live so long.
I don't know. I don't fight it. I live it.
She doesn't fight it. She lives it. And that's what her granddaughter actually said to me. When people ask her that, she says she just lives. Any secret food or anything we can all be eating every day to stay alive as long as you?
No.
Nope, just live it. But
see, you get to 110, you don't give a shit about giving a good interview, right?
Oh, my word.
What a horrible assignment for this poor reporter. I mean, this poor woman's trying her best. This old lady is not giving a quarter. No quarter is given.
But as Flossie gave less, she gave more, which made it worse.
Mm.
Well, there you have it.
Oh, poor Flossie. Let's just hear if it ends well.
Nope, just live it. But joining me here is Chris Barr. Chris, you've been known Flossie for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Tell us a little bit about her and the time that you've known her here at the Cheney Care Center.
She's a grumpy old bitch and she weasels over the corridors. Is that what he's going
to
say?
Well, when Flossie first came to us, it was a new experience for her. She was scared, honestly. The other thing was she acclimated very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We've had her here. She's a jokester. She does tell jokes.
Her favorite joke is to take a reporter into her confidence and then not tell her everything or anything at all.
She does tell jokes. Her favorite thing, according to her family, is to sit down and have some whiskey straight up.
There you go. Some whiskey straight up. I also heard you enjoy an occasional piece of pie. So, Flossie, happy 110th birthday. Oh. If you do the math, she was born in 1906 on February 18th. Matt and Cheerson, we're going to send it back to you guys.
Happy birthday, Flossie.
You do the math.
You know what? I think Flossie just wants to say, get that TV camera out of here.
Totally.
Yeah, right.
Let me sip on my cup of coffee and then take a nap. You know, and who could blame her? Don't fight it, live it.
Live it. So go out and do as Flossie does.
Thanks for being with us this morning. How cool is that?
We'll see you tomorrow.
And then Flossie, probably shortly after the interview, decided she'd had enough of life. But imagine that. 4 years and a $50,000 degree for journalism, and you get to spend it among old, wee-stricken pensioners. Isn't that great?
It just, but you don't talk to her like Flossie's a puppy. I mean, Fluffy's got some shit on the go. She's not completely dead just yet. Like, how are you feeling, Flossie?
Yeah.
Your favorite color is pink. What?
Why don't you ask her something important? I mean, this is a woman who's got 110 years of information.
Wow. Exactly.
It might be dusty and cobwebby up there, but she's got some stuff to tell you. Who did you prefer, Flossie? Theodore Roosevelt or Franklin Delano Roosevelt?
Like, which is your favorite World War?
Yeah, which is your favorite World War?
Your favorite.
Do you remember Donald Trump when he was still poor? Those are the kind of questions you ask her. Who do you think is the best president in 110 years? Now, wouldn't that be interesting?
It's like, you talk about Justin Bieber, compare him to, like, Frank Sinatra. So 110, it's like, come on.
You see, there are two sides of the spectrum here. There's Flossie, who's prime A candidate of being sick of life. It's like, can we get this thing over and done with now?
She just wants to pass the finish line. Yeah.
And then there's a 106-year-old who's like, you know what? Actually, I could enjoy this while it lasts.
Sure. But that's why I'm saying age is really just a number. Now, Anushka says, what I've learned from Flossie is that I don't want to be that old ever.
Yeah.
If I do live to be that old, send me to the monks so I can be alone. This reporter is very annoying. Well, she's just trying to do her job.
I drink every day.
I would drink if I were that reporter.
Yeah, I'd be high
every day. Wouldn't you take every drug you could get your hands on?
When you're at that age, I'd be high all the time.
Big time.
I really think, no disrespect, after 80, I think you've really done everything in life. If you've had a successful career.
Sure.
Maybe you've wanted to get married. You probably have great grandchildren at that stage. 80 years old. That liver thing
you don't
should
have anything
be disregarded.
You don't have anything to prove to anyone, right?
Not at all.
Just sit there with the biggest bong you can find.
Oh, yeah.
And get yourself stoned out of your mind. Right? 110 years old. Like, you have to prove anything. And then when the journalist comes around, at least if you're high, you'll say something interesting.
Oh, a high 80-year-old. That would be hilarious.
All right. What else is in the news, Mubs?
Well, the Films and Publications Amendment Bill, Well, this is an interesting one. Now, it's going to be presented in Parliament today.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're trying to do is to outlaw revenge porn. Because, you know, you get those idiots who think that it's a cool idea to distribute pictures or videos of their exes for some reason, whatever it is.
There's quite a lot of that going on, actually.
Communications Minister Faith Mutambi and the Films and Publications Board will present the bill to Parliament's Communications Committee.
Here she is, getting ready. You want to hear?
Uh-oh, I shit my diaper.
Odor in the court. Odor in the court.
Sometimes it's mostly diarrhea and mostly it's hard.
That's the Minister, Faith Mutambi, getting ready to propose a bill.
The bill seeks to amend the Act by closing gaps in relation to online content regulation.
Uh-huh.
If passed, offenders could face up to 2 years in jail or a fine of up to 150,000 rand.
Yeah, I think that should stop a couple of people from doing stupid stuff online.
Revenge porn is the distribution of private sexual photographs and films without consent from the individual featured.
Hey, could you revenge porn anybody?
No.
Flex,
I don't have that kind of material.
Could you revenge porn anybody?
No, yes. I don't know. What counts, like, not probably.
Pictures and video.
Yeah, no, back in my single days, a lot of people send me pictures and videos.
Mm-hmm.
Were their faces in the...
Yeah, most... most definitely, but I would never. It's not in my nature.
All right.
Yeah, I couldn't revenge porn anyone. Anybody who sends me pictures like that never has their face in it.
That's very unkind of them.
No, well, I mean...
I mean, that, how inconsiderate of them to not include a face.
No, well, it's the smart thing to do, is how not many, to include your face.
How many dick pics do you get nowadays?
Not as many as Nina Hasty. Nina gets a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just because she gave Duncan a number.
Hey, listen. Mike says, hey, Gareth, these sound effects. I'm queuing at Home Affairs and I forgot my earphones. I'm already getting weird looks for listening on the loudspeaker and you have to go and play diaper toilet shit. Well, enjoy your time at Home Affairs. Flax, can we talk to Shane Germaner from The Star?
Yes.
Find out about what happened in court yesterday with Radovan. Do you want to hear, Mubs?
Yeah.
All right, let's find out. It was the most exciting trial of 2016 so far. Radovan Krejcer, arch gangster and warlord, was in court defending himself, or rather pleading his own case without legal representation. Shane, good morning.
Morning, Gareth.
Nice of you to talk to us this morning. I know you've got another busy day ahead of you today, right? He appears back in court today.
That's right, that's right. I think we're expecting more dramatic stuff. Probably not as dramatic as yesterday, but it should be interesting.
Tell me what happened yesterday. I didn't get to see any of it live. It must have been almost like a... like you're watching a bad TV show, right?
Yeah, not the best court procedural. Unfortunately, Radovan had to represent himself, and it was quite dramatic watching, you know, someone who's seen as very powerful and someone who's supposedly the head of the local underworld, basically having all of his applications squelched in this rather one-sided duel with Judge Colin Lamont. And then suddenly, shortly after this duel concludes, a very conveniently timed bomb threat coming in, and the entire court being thrust into chaos.
Wow. Let's just start with the fact that he arrived in a white T-shirt, like a mafioso who's about to have spaghetti in some Italian restaurant in New York.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is one of the few people among these accused who doesn't really dress up for court. I mean, he's been wearing the same sort of tattered jeans and white T-shirt and usually a leather jacket, though I'm guessing because it's summer, it's quite hot. He's not wearing it anymore. And it's just sort of been his style every time he's appeared in court. So I don't think he really bothers to dress up.
Why did he represent himself? This is a guy who's employed many, many lawyers over the course of his time here in South Africa since he arrived here. What was it? It was 2007, I think, when he got to South Africa, or 2005.
Yes, he arrived in 2007, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And you're right, he has had some very high-powered lawyers on his side. I mean, he originally had BDK attorneys representing him for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And he's just had numerous conflicts with them. He's fired a bunch of them. He's had issues paying them. That seems to be the main reason now. And yesterday, it seems that the main problem was that his new lawyer, Cliff Alexander, simply wasn't available. He had another case going, and that was one of his applications. He wanted a postponement so that Alexander could actually appear. But there's also an issue in terms of paying him, I believe, because apparently the money that Alexander is owed is still in the account of Krejcer's previous lawyer, Nardis Krevier. So I think there might be a few issues there, yeah.
Does he have any money left?
Well, this is apparently not locally. He comes from a particularly wealthy family from the Czech Republic. From what I understand, they have a rather large publishing empire. But every time his mother has tried to wire the money to him here in South Africa, he's claiming that local authorities are blocking it, meaning he has no access to it. So ultimately, he's struggling to get that money through and to his legal team.
Where are his family? Do they appear in court as well?
No. While his wife and his son often would appear at his court proceedings, they haven't been in the country for several months now. They initially moved away to the Czech Republic on a holiday trip, and the Department of Home Affairs actually banned them from returning to the country, which oddly enough, is actually a major problem concerning Krejcer's son, Dennis, because he's now one of the prime suspects in the murder of alleged Betterview drug dealer Sam Issa. And now that he's not allowed in the country, there's simply no way The police could have simply arrested him as he arrived back in the country, but now this has to be an extradition process. So it seems that Home Affairs kind of shot the SAPS down in their investigation there.
Shane, the judge had a nice one-on-one with Radovan in the court in front of everybody. Radovan was saying that he should recuse himself because he doesn't like him. He's partisan. And the judge said, is that all? And he tried to get reasons from Radovan as to why he couldn't judge this case. Radovan wasn't able to supply those. He also wanted postponements. Did Radovan rack up any successes at all in court yesterday?
Oh, not really. I mean, his entire argument for the judge's recusal seemed to be that Lamont was showing bias since he first heard that Radovan was trying to kill him through media reports.
Well, that would make you a little biased, wouldn't it?
Well, at this point, yeah, Lamont has claimed the entire time he doesn't take any of the media allegations seriously. Now, I mean, it could technically be sort of one point on Radovan's side, but I mean, this is what the judge is claiming. He's saying he's not influenced. He has no reason to believe these wild allegations. There's no evidence that Radovan is trying to kill him, and it's simply these stories are, as Radovan said, these wild allegations that the media is publishing simply to make him appear bad. So I don't think that was really much of a scored legal point, which is why Lamont was so easily able to dismiss the application.
Wow, and this judge seems to be tough as nails.
Yeah, he's no nonsense, that's for sure. He is just simply not willing to take any sort of delaying tactics at this point. I mean, I sort of understand, because this sentencing proceedings have been going on since August, September last year. He was convicted in August, and every single time there's been a delay. And let's be honest here, it wasn't entirely Radovan's fault, even though at least two of the postponements were his fault because he fired his lawyers. But the state has failed to get the pre-sentencing reports. There's been a number of other delays. So I understand that Lamont really, really, it looks as though he really wants to complete it this week.
What are the details around the supposed bomb threat then? What happened?
Well, it was actually during Anlene Funanhirva, who represents accused number two, Desaila Pondo. It was during her arguments in mitigation for a client that suddenly prosecutor Louis Marchiani spoke up immediately, interrupted proceedings and said, I'm sorry, there's been a breach in security. Now, I'm talking seconds later, Judge Lamont immediately suspended the proceedings and essentially rushed out of the courtroom.
What did you do? I mean, you were sitting there, right? Do you get nervous?
Yes, yeah. To be quite honest, no. I don't think anyone quite believed it, because we didn't hear immediately it was a bomb threat. Firstly, it was just a security breach. And then we started seeing the tactical response team members, and there's like more than a dozen of them in court.
Oh my, I would have shat myself. Are you telling me you didn't run out of the courtroom?
No, we sort of calmly walked out as per instructions by the tactical response team officers. It was only after speaking with the investigation team that we found out, actually, this is a bomb threat. Now, it was quite interesting seeing the lawyers' reaction, because none of them seemed to be taking it seriously. So I think that's what kept a lot of us from being too panicked. I mean, most people left, but I, probably in quite a stupid move, decided to stick around until the bomb unit arrived.
You're an
idiot. Yeah, definitely. it was actually at that point that we saw that the bomb unit had specifically been brought to the sixth floor. And I spoke with members of the canine unit there, and they said, no, their mandate was specifically to do floor six, as in the floor where Radovan's case was happening. And they were still waiting for their mandate to do the rest of the building. So anyone who's trying to say this bomb threat wasn't linked to Radovan's case is most likely lying.
Tell me, what kind of a sentence is he looking at doing? And is that all that's going to happen in court today, is that he'll be sentenced?
No. I mean, there's still quite a bit to get through. What could happen is they might separate the case of four of the other accused, because their lawyers essentially finished up. That's the three police officers and Sibonise Mia. He's a taxi business operator. Their case could be separated entirely, and they could be sentenced, while then Radovan has to finish arguing his case. Desaila Pondo has to finish, his lawyer has to finish arguing her case. And then, of course, we've got Judge Lamont, who actually has to write up the sentence. So to expect the proceedings to be completed today might be a little bit optimistic, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's done in the next 2-3 days.
Shane, thank you very much. Shane Jeminoff from The Star. And we can read more about that in The Star today, right?
That's right, yeah. Very good. And it's Germana.
Thank you. Germana, sorry.
No worries.
There we go. Thanks, man. Don't try to get a surname that's not so difficult to pronounce next time, all right?
It's been a problem my whole life.
I'm sorry. Shane Germana from The Star. Thank you very much, dude. Nice to speak to you. Tell you what, if I were that judge, I would run.
I know.
I'd run I'd flee the country like Radovan's family. That's got to be the worst assignment. You're the judge and you get your court role and oh no, Critch is coming to me. The worst gangster in the country.
Did you guys also read that he told the judge that he knows where the judge lives
yes.
in Bedford View?
Yes.
I would have left the building right then.
Yeah, but the judge sounds hardcore too, because the judge lives in Bedford View, and the judge was like, I don't give a shit. Go on. What are you going to do?
Still.
Amazing.
He hasn't got any money to pay for these hits, though.
Yeah, he doesn't. Gangsters, huh? Different world. Ugh. What happened to you at the gym, Flax? You used to go to the same gym as Radovan.
Well, Radovan used to go to the Bedford View Center, and there was this car that used to park in the handicap parking. Yeah. And on the way to gym, I'd always look at this car and be like, there's no handicap signs. What like a douchebag. And I was always like, if I ever see the owner, I'm going to like say something. And now I was looking at Radovan's car collection this morning, and it was his car. Luckily, I didn't do anything.
Can you imagine if he'd written a note like, hey, oh, douchebag, meet me outside the gym. I got to talk to you about stealing the handicap parking. And then he'd pitch up, yo, what do you want to say? What you got? What is the problem?
But I also heard that he used to love going to this fish restaurant in the center.
Yeah, all the gangsters went there.
So what the fish restaurant did was where he loved to sit by the parking lot, they put up a bulletproof like glass thing just in case somebody tried to attack him while he was eating.
That's right.
It's so hectic, this lifestyle.
It's not a lifestyle. These are dangerous people. And you know what? Eventually, thank goodness, eventually the bad things happen to them. You don't know how many people have died because he was doing deals.
But you don't know how many other Radovans there are in South Africa.
Sure. But they're not as high profile as he is.
We just don't know about them.
And you've got to get the guy at the top so you can get the whole network destroyed.
So you're saying he's at the top?
Well, he was kind of the underworld boss, remember? They say he's responsible for the whole Lolly Jackson situation. There was that other guy in Cape Town, Cyril Beeka. There's a lot of people who were involved, and Radovan was at the top of the pyramid.
Isn't there a movie or book I can go read to find out about the underworld?
The first thing you should do is read that Mandy Wiener Killing Kebble book.
Mm.
And then there are a bunch of others. There's one written by Sean Newman, who runs Sexpo.
Yeah?
I'll get that for you, because that's an interesting story.
Any movies?
Well, this could be a movie. This could easily be a movie. What else is in the news, Mubs?
Well, speaking of the law, Bill Cosby's wife, Camille, was called in to testify yesterday.
Oh, no.
In a deposition in Massachusetts, where her husband is suing... this guy. He is suing seven women who accuse him of sexual assault. Camille was called to give evidence in a hotel room of all places. This is very strange.
I chose the venue.
Oh boy.
I remember it well. 1986. A young lady who wanted to be an actress. I said, come to my room. She said, okay. I said, do you want a drink? She said, sure. I popped a pill in the drink. And the rest is history.
Now, lawyers say that the intensely private 71-year-old Camille will return on March the 14th for the second part of her deposition.
You know why. She's intensely private, right?
Sure. There is actually no information available on what went down in that deposition. There was very high security. And very little, if any, information is available in terms of what happened there.
Hmm.
Now, Bill is... he's accusing these seven women of lying in alleging that he assaulted them. Jeez. And he's saying that they did so in order to damage his reputation and exact financial reward. More than 50 women have come forward nationally to accuse the 70-year-old television legend of sexual assault. The couple have been married for 52 years. Now, Yesterday's deposition marks the first time that Camille has been forced to give evidence in cases against her husband. Because up until now, her and her legal team have been able to avoid this, you know, stating that whole spousal support thing.
Yeah, she basically, you can't testify against your husband or wife.
Now, if your husband or wife kills someone, mm-hmm. you can't be made to testify, mm-mm. even though you know for a fact that, yes,
yeah.
he took the shank and stabbed the neighbor.
You can, but you can't be forced to. So if you think, well, you know what? Bill is not the kind of husband that deserves my protection anymore. You can tell the authorities. Yeah, yeah, I saw him. He dragged the girl up the stairs by her hair and put a whole lot of Rohypnol in her system. Or Quaaludes or whatever it was. But if you want to tell nobody, you can claim spousal privilege. It's like your psychologist can never go to court and testify against you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's how it works.
Sure. So apart from their 52 years of marriage, in addition, Camille has also been Cosby's former business partner. In December 2014, as the onslaught of allegations built up, Camille leapt to defend her wonderful husband and criticize the media coverage. So she'll be back.
I wish we could hear that. Can you imagine?
I know. There's absolutely no information available on what went down there. Because
what an interesting situation that's got to be, where you're defending your husband, Bill Cosby, against the things that he's supposed to have done. I mean, she's got to be either the most supportive wife in the world, or she's so angry and so bitter, and she's like, Bill, I'm backing you because I want all this money when you go to jail. Or I don't want you to go to jail so we can keep on living our lives. How old are they? In their 70s?
They're both in their 70s.
Yeah, you got to ask yourself what her motivation is, because she could probably sink him at this point. Maybe there's a part of her that really loves him and really believes he didn't do anything.
There was an episode of Scandal that touched on this very topic where a reputable university lecturer and professor was found to have been sexually harassing his female students by drugging them. And by the end of the episode, it had been discovered that his wife was the one supplying him with the medication to drug these girls. So you've just got to wonder, I mean, how much of a role Camille has played in this.
Everybody's got their thing, right?
She must have known.
She's got to have. There's no way.
Absolutely no way.
Yeah, she knew. And she said, okay.
I'm just going to the drugstore. What are you getting, Bill? Just my vitamins. Those don't look like vitamins. Oh, they're just a different kind. They make especially for me.
See,
can I try one? No, don't do that.
And I bet when Camille was feeling like it was time to, you know, do the things that married people do, I bet Bill knocked himself out.
Oh, sure.
Well, that's the thing, is if you know that your partner is going out drugging people and sexually assaulting them, and then they come back home and they want to get down with you, do you?
No.
Like, do the two of you still get it on? Or is, like, it's just weird.
Ugh. The whole thing is just appalling. It's very, very upsetting.
Maybe it was just a situation where, I mean, it's always good to speculate wildly, where it was like, look, Camille, I think we're done. And she's like, no, Bill, look, go have sex with other women. I'll be your wife. Let's just, you know, we're already in our 40s.
Maybe she's cut a deal with him.
Definitely cutting a deal there.
And she said to him, look, I'll back you, but you know, I want X, Y, and Z in money.
Yeah.
I want the house. I want this. I want that. I don't want kids to be involved. Whatever. You know, there's got to be a plan. She's got a plan here. There's no way she would do this just for support purposes.
And that's why he probably felt so comfortable doing it, because he had his wife's consent.
Correct. There we go. That's probably happened. I mean, worse things than that have happened. What is it, Flex?
I don't know if this is some joke or something, but when you Google Bill Cosby's net worth, it comes up with a block with the net worth and a little script about him, but where the photo of Bill Cosby is supposed to be, like all other celebrities, it's a photo of Kevin Hart.
Oh, wow. Okay, they must have that wrong. I don't think it's intentional. What would it mean if it were?
I don't know.
What is he worth?
$400 million.
See, that's a good payday for Camille. Right? I suppose if he goes to jail, he has to forfeit some of that money. Or certainly, he can't benefit from it. Would she get it? Or would it be better for her to have him outside of prison? Of course, you don't want a husband who's in prison. Oh, yeah, I don't know. I really don't know.
Or maybe in this case you do, because then it's like, problem solved.
That's what I'm thinking. Is it easier for her if he goes to jail or if he stays out of jail? Let's imagine she's that cold and calculating. What's in it for her? All right. What else have we got?
An Egyptian court has sentenced an author to 2 years in jail for public indecency. This is after excerpts of his sexually explicit novel were published in a newspaper. You see this world that we live in. Now a man is going to jail for 2 years because he wrote about some sex stuff. A chapter from the novel from the novelist's book was serialized in a state-owned literary newspaper. Now, the newspaper's editor has also been ordered to pay a fine of 10,000 Egyptian pounds.
Is this just for upsetting people for printing sex?
Yes, this is exactly for that reason, Gareth. There was a man who complained about, you know, he picked up the newspaper and he read this 50 Shades of Grey stuff. And then he complained and he said it was distressful in his life.
Isn't this weird?
And then because of that complaint, the editor was forced to pay a fine. And now this guy was taken to court and now he's going to spend 2 years in jail for public indecency.
We all have sex, right? Why would someone be upset by someone writing about sex? It's such hypocrisy. Just get on. Why are people so upset about sex? Why does it upset people? Why does it make people so angry? Why do they want to exact nastiness on other people because writing about sex? It's not even having sex. It's writing about it. It's so bizarre. Hey, did you hear about Donald Trump? Are you done with that story?
Yeah.
Donald Trump put a reporter in his place. You know, Donald is not like every other politician. He's going to try and be friendly and kind and thoughtful and try to let the journalists ask questions, and he's going to answer them as politely as he can. That's not how Donald operates, right? Donald has a different way of doing things. So here he is. He slams this journalist because the journalist misquotes him about how he feels about abortion. Because he has kind of, he's changed his position on this. And even though the reporter quotes him incorrectly, Donald does not let it lie.
Why didn't you read that? By the way, why didn't you read that before?
I pulled it up the wire.
No, but why didn't you read that before? You didn't read. I hate the concept of
abortion. I'm reading it to you on my question.
Excuse me.
Are you a trustworthy?
Excuse me. Very trustworthy. More so than you. Because you know what? You didn't read the question. See, when you quoted Tim Russert, you didn't read what you just said. Read it again. No, read it again.
I'll read it out.
Go ahead.
Very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion.
Okay, you didn't read. Why didn't you say, and when you asked the question before, that I hate the concept of abortion? No. You were quoting Tim Russert, and you were quoting, excuse me, you were quoting Tim, and you were quoting me. Why didn't you read my quote the way I said it?
Sir, I tried to pull it up, and I didn't have Wi-Fi.
Well, then you got to get Wi-Fi, okay? Well, don't ask me questions like that. You're not a very good reporter doing that. Okay, go ahead.
So, you know, most politicians would say, oh, okay, you know, I said this in this year, and that's what happened. He's like, no, you quoted me out of context. Check it. Read it now. And the guy goes, because he doesn't have Wi-Fi. So Donald's like, you're a very bad reporter, which frankly the guy is. Then he comes back later with another question. Donald's gone around the room. He's asked a few other reporters questions. So he goes back to this guy.
Do you have a question that now is a legitimate question? Do you apologize? Do you apologize?
Do I apologize for reading your words?
For not reading my words. No. For not reading my words. No, do you apologize for not reading my words? I didn't ask that. I didn't ask that. Excuse me. You quoted me and you took out the main part of the quote. I'm just asking, do you apologize?
Even if you hate abortion, doesn't that...
Okay, forget you.
Mr. Trump!
You know, part of me really wants Trump to be president of the United States because this kind of stuff will not happen. Can you imagine?
And when he becomes president, he'll be even more opinionated. Oh. Everything will be times 10.
Oh, he'll be the worst guy to have conversations with in the world.
And his whole third-person thing will be, well, the Mr.
Trump says, President Trump says, you better stop your nonsense. I just love the way he says to the guy, apologize. The guy's like, no. Apologize. No.
Like, international relations will take place on Twitter.
I'll tell you what, if some Middle Eastern country misbehaves under President Trump, he will just turn it into a big glass crater without second thoughts. Diplomacy be damned. There'll be some Qatar or Abu Dhabi or Kuwait or Afghanistan will pipe up and say something, and Trump won't like it, and he'll just destroy the whole place. Oh, then somebody asked him about, because I've told you before, he's not the world's greatest Christian, but he goes on about how he suddenly is because he needs to win the election, right? And this is what always happens. Like, Obama never really gave a damn about religion until he had to run for office. That's what people do. They pretend. And this is what Trump said about forgiveness.
So we've got people lined up for questions. I just got one more, because you used the word Christian. Have you ever asked God for forgiveness? That's a tough question. I don't think in terms of, I'm a religious person. Shockingly, because people are so shocked when they find this out, I'm Protestant, I'm Presbyterian. And I go to church and I love God and I love my church. And Norman Vincent Peale, the great Norman Vincent Peale, was my pastor. The power of positive thinking. Everybody's heard of Norman Vincent Peale. He was so great. He would give a sermon, you never wanted to leave. Sometimes we have sermons and every once in a while we think about leaving a little early, right? Even though we're Christian. Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, Frank, would give a sermon. I'm telling you, I still remember his sermons. It was unbelievable. And what he would do is he'd bring real life situations, modern day situations, into the sermon. And you could listen to him all day long. When you left the church, you were disappointed that it was over. He was the greatest guy. And then, you know, he passed away, but he was a great... He wrote The Power of Positive Thinking, which is a great book.
But have you ever asked God for forgiveness?
I'm not sure I have. I just go and try and do a better job from there. I don't...
He doesn't need forgiveness, is what he's really saying. Isn't that... That's something... He doesn't need to ask God for forgiveness because he's done nothing wrong.
The scary thing is the elections are only in November.
Yeah.
So we have quite a few more months of all of this nonsense.
That's right.
Wow.
I think so. I think if I do something wrong, I think I just try and make it right. I don't bring God into that picture. I don't. Now, when I take, you know, when we go in church and when I drink my little wine, which is about the only wine I drink, and have my little cracker, I guess that's a form of asking for forgiveness. And I do that as often as possible because I feel cleansed, okay? But
He's making this up, right? You could tell this is not his. He doesn't go often enough to know what it all is. The whole communion thing. I mean, I don't go, I'm not a Catholic, and I understand more about communion than Donald Trump just explained now. I have my little wine. I don't normally drink a lot of wine, and I have a cracker. It's meant to be the blood and the flesh of Christ, right? Something like that. It's quite a big deal. He makes it sound like he's having a snack and a quick drink.
That's important. I do that. But in terms of officially, I could say absolutely, and everybody... I don't think in terms of that. I think in terms of... Let's go on and let's make it right.
So let's, again, you've gone into it. If I don't ask this question, this audience will be disappointed. Straight question, what is your relationship with God?
Now, they really are nailing him on this because he doesn't have much of a history of being a particularly religious guy. And unfortunately, I mean, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But in America, you do have to be. To get particularly the Republican vote, right? So they're nailing him on this.
Well, I pray. I go to church. Do I do things that are wrong? I guess so. You know, I'm a business person. I really do well at business. I've done great. I've made some of the great deals. I own some of the greatest properties in the world. Am I totally...
Suddenly it becomes his balance sheet. Do you see that? He went from his relationship with God straight to his balance sheet. The kahunas on this guy.
Well, that is his God.
I think God helped me. Personally, I think God helped me. I think, you know, look, God helped me by giving me a certain brain, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, I went through a phenomenal school, the Wharton School of Finance, which is said to be the greatest business school in the world. I did really well there. I was a great student.
Everything's
so,
the greatest.
I mean, I was born with a certain intellect that is good for this. John McCain goes... Oh, boy, Trump makes my life difficult. He had 15,000 crazies show up, crazies. He called them all crazy. I said, they weren't crazy. They were great Americans. These people, if you would have seen these people, I know what a crazy is. I know.
He's working really hard to distract them from the question. Am I right, Mubs?
Yeah, it's all bullshit.
Right? You can tell, huh? I don't think I'm being unkind to Trump here.
I know all about crazies. These weren't crazy. So he insulted me, and he insulted everybody in that room. And I said, somebody should run against John McCain, who has been, you know, in my opinion, not so hot. And I supported him. I supported him for president. I raised $1 million for him. It's a lot of money. I supported him. He lost. He let us down. But, you know, he lost. So I never liked him as much after that, because I don't like losers. But Frank, let me get to it. He hit me. He's not a war hero.
He's a war hero.
He's a war hero.
5.5 years.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
Do you agree with that?
He's a war hero because he was captured.
Wow. He really does. I mean, it's just unbelievable how Trump is all ego. 100% of him is ego. He's basically one. He's a big walking, talking penis. The whole thing. Unreal.
I secretly want him to become president because I want to see just how much he can ruin things.
Or not. Because you never know.
There have been worse people in presidential office.
Because
if you're that much ego, you're bound to do a terrible job.
It's kind of like the car crash theory. Why people watch motorsport. They want people to crash.
Yeah.
The greater majority, unless you're a purist, like think if you're a purist politician or politics person, you want the best man to win. We're on the outside. We want a car crash. We want Trump.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you something. Whether it's him or Bernie Sanders, it'll be a whole lot more interesting than if it's Hillary or Jeb Bush. I can tell you that much. And part of me really thinks like it's outrageous that somebody like Trump could run for office because he's so not a politician. And he doesn't have a constituency and he has no one to cater to here. But he's hugely popular. And then the other part of me says, you know what? In this world of political correctness and of insanity gone wild. I mean, can you imagine at the UN? You know, the United Nations, we try to get the whole world talking. We try to get problems solved. I mean, you imagine there's a Security Council. And America pays for much of what the United Nations. First of all, their headquarters are in New York. The U.S. pays a lot more than any other country to keep the U.N. going. Now, if Trump became president and a country like Burkina Faso says we deserve to be on the Security Council, he'd go, fine, be on the Security Council. We're taking all our money out. We don't care about the U.N. anymore. And by the way, the headquarters have to move out of Washington. I'm turning that into a Trump hotel. And you know he'd do it, right? You know, he would do it. He would not sit and negotiate with a whole bunch of people from Burkina Faso. He would tell them to go and suck a bag of dicks. And a part of me kind of wants to see that sort of world and what it would be like to live in that world. Because we haven't seen anyone run a place like that since Bob Mugabe was in the heat of his self-confidence before he became an old doddering asshole. And I think that there are interesting things to be seen here. Of course, I don't really want Trump to be president of the United States because I think he's out of control.
But that kind of world would be like a play school playground because mm-hmm. Trump is a bully.
Right.
And so everybody else would be screwed except America. Like
yeah.
All of us would be screwed in a world like that.
But isn't that what you vote for when you vote for the leader of your country so that your country can be powerful?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying that for the rest of us, we're screwed.
Oh, we're in big
it
shit.
Would be
yeah.
like,
basically,
it would be problematic because Trump would be going around giving us wedgies and stealing our lunch money and beating us
right.
up like, every day.
Get out of there. Right. We're just going to go to school to get beaten up.
Yeah.
Sean, what's up?
Morning, guys.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Good. Tell me, don't you think Donald Trump running for president, I mean, he's got... So many companies and properties and whatever. I'm sure he's got construction companies and all that. So I don't think he's really in it for the better for America. I think he's going to award some government tenders.
Dude.
to himself and just become more richer.
He's got $8 billion. He's got everything a man could want. What would he want more money for at this point? $8 billion is all you need. If the guy was after self enrichment, he'd just have to sit and wait for the money to grow in his account.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing. You know that when you work for, I don't know, 10,000 rand a month, it's never enough. You'll find places to waste that 10,000 rand, and then you could earn 30,000 rand a month, and suddenly within 2-3 months. Yeah. You'll find yourself back at the 10,000 rand mark because you'll just find a place to waste it.
It's funny. The one thing I don't doubt is that Donald Trump actually does think he could run America well. And I don't doubt that he cares about America. Funnily enough, I don't think he's after money here. I think it's like, it's like why Cyril Ramaphosa went back into politics. You know what happens to these guys? They want to leave a legacy. They want to change the world. They want to do big things. And sometimes in business, you can't get any bigger than a certain ceiling. I think he wants to do things.
Yeah, I don't know so much. I think it's a power thing. You know, when you've got 8 billion rand or $8 billion or whatever it is, you've achieved pretty much everything that you could achieve.
Right.
So what's the next step?
The next step is for you to change the world.
More power.
It's either change the world or become a philanthropist. And you know, Donald's not the most philanthropic guy in the world.
Anyway, have a good day, guys.
All right, Sean. I don't doubt that he means what he says.
Yeah.
As crazy as some of the things that he says sound, I don't think he doesn't mean it. I think he means it. When he says make America great again, I don't know what that means, where it comes from, but I think he means it. He means like he could make America better. And like Mab says, it would be like a bully on the playground.
Well, I mean, he's also a bigot. So,
sure. And a racist. I mean, he hates Mexicans.
Well, he hates everyone. He has a problem with women. He has a problem with Mexicans, with Muslims. Like, he has a problem with everyone.
Right. So certainly the world would be interesting when you have an actual bigot in office. Someone who's unapologetically bigoted. My God. All right. Anything else you want to throw in there? Yes, Flex. What's happening?
You know that song that you hated yesterday with Rihanna and Drake?
Yeah, that work.
Well, it went viral yesterday because they released the music video.
No, it went viral because we talked about it.
So the music video, Rihanna and Drake basically dry hump each other for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then Drake sits on a couch and Rihanna with like a see-through shirt that you can see her nipples just like dances provocatively in front of him. It's just, I don't know, it just plays with you a bit given that they were in a relationship and now they're like dry humping.
But don't you see they're playing you? Oh. Can't you see through this? This is obviously a shit song and they need to now sell it. So what they do is they repeat the same lyric over and over again, which shows you they're lazy. Number two, they make a music video where they try to make it as sexual as possible because they know that that sells. Mm. There's very little content going on here.
But I think the setting for this kind of song is a club where it's just a repetitive beat, repetitive tune, where you're so drunk you don't even realize you've heard the same word 100 times.
Is that good for sober people?
No, but I think it was made for a club setting.
Well, then we shouldn't be playing it on radio, right? Well, and it shouldn't be on the charts.
Well, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but Rihanna and Drake's work has now risen to number one on the Hot 100.
There we go.
The song becomes Rihanna's 14th leader, lifting her past Michael Jackson in terms of number one.
Oh, God,
songs.
Help us. All right, I'm out of here.
So let's look at this. Let's look at this ranking system quickly. Number one songs on the chart. Stevie Wonder had 10. Janet Jackson, 10.
Yeah.
Whitney Houston, 11.
Mm-hmm.
The Supremes and Madonna, 12.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson, 13 number ones. Rihanna is in third place with 14.
Ugh.
Then you've got Mariah Carey in second place with 18 number one singles. And the Beatles, 20. So just think about what you were saying yesterday and understand that Rihanna now has more number one songs than Michael Jackson. Because that's what the people want.
Oh. Work.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
That's what the people want.
All right.
Look, when Rihanna's
this
music...
just proves you... You know what? This proves the majority never know what the hell's going on. The majority of people on Earth are just completely useless organisms who have no idea. That's what this proves.
If you think Rihanna's song shit, last night, just before midnight, Bieber dropped a song, Oh Girl, and that is shit.
Wow. And for you to say Bieber's song is bad.
That says a lot.
That, honestly, I was expecting, I had such a hype up about it, and then I was like, I listened halfway through and I just cut it.
What's it called?
Oh Girl.
Please don't tell me you, like, stayed up especially for this.
I did.
Oh, sorry.
Do you want to hear it? I'm sure everybody wants
we
to hear it now.
Might as well.
All right, let's see. Is this it?
Yeah.
Take my hand, put it on your chest, 'cause I need your love. Yeah.
Not so bad. Why do you hate it so much?
No.
What's the problem?
Compared to the other things he's done.
Hold on a second. And what's wrong? You see, this is what I don't understand about you. Why is this a bad song? But some of his other stuff, which you do like, that's pretty average as well, is fine. It's fantastic and you love it.
I don't know. This is just not him.
Like, I'm trying to figure out what your matrix of evaluation is.
Like, Justin Bieber, Love Yourself. That is
beautiful
epitome
song.
Of
I love
greatness.
It's a great song, yeah.
Now compare that to this. This is Jut.
But not everyone's gonna... What's Jut?
This song that played
what's,
now.
What's Jut?
Jut, shit.
Oh, is that what...
It's colonial...
Colloquial.
Colloquial.
Colonial. Jut.
Jut.
What does it mean? Where does it come from?
Jut.
Hmm.
I don't know where it comes from. It just means like, oh, this is shit. It's Jut.
It's just a colloquial.
Flex. I sometimes use words that maybe other people don't know. But I try to figure out what they actually are so that I can explain them to other people. Because someone's bound to go, what does that mean?
Yeah, but in a world of slang, where new words are being made up all the time. I mean, it sounds like this is what it is. Like, it's just a new word.
Jut.
No, it's been around for years.
I've never heard that. For years, where?
Schwet. Also,
what?
Schwet.
Dude, where are these words coming from? Are you lying in bed at night making them up?
Hold on 1 second.
Oh, there we go. Thank you.
There we go.
Anyway, let's get back to Bieber for a second. I don't... this is not a horrible... Like, that Rihanna song is horrible. Ben, help me out here.
I agree with you, Gareth. Everyone said that
this is not
Justin Bieber's latest album was the best, and Michael said it was so-so.
I don't understand. I mean, this latest album has got What Do You Mean? It's got Love Yourself, which, by the way, I worked out the other day is actually Fuck Yourself. Did you figure that out?
Mm-mm. Oh, Flex, is Love Yourself
you
the
out?
Censored
really?
Version?
Yeah, if you think about it, he's singing, and how does it go again?
And if you like the way that you look that much.
And if you like the way... You look that much, oh baby, you can go and fuck yourself. That's what he's really saying.
Okay.
He's just, I'm telling you, he's put love there because he needed it to be a radio hit.
Mums, isn't it great that we get to spend so much time with these Bieber fans who depict his songs word for word, find hidden meanings, and share it with us? It's an incredible time to be alive.
You're going to have to play the song because I actually don't know what song you're talking about.
Ivan, I'll get to it, Mums. Ivan, what's up?
Yeah, I can tell you what Jut means.
What is Jut and where does it come from?
Jut comes from, it's a colloquial term, and it's used when people are smoking, like, a dacha pipe.
Ah.
It's the kind of weed they use inside a dacha pipe that's not very good quality.
Oh. Thank you very much for clearing that up. Flax, what kind of people are you hanging around?
I did learn about it from Capetonians on camp.
Right.
All right, well, that's what...
So it's bad quality weed?
Bad quality weed.
All right. You smoke some weed?
Like the station.
Do you smoke some weed?
On occasion, not so much as I used to.
Okay. Well, how much were you doing?
Not that much.
Okay.
But, I have been around a few bad times in my past.
Recreational, right?
Recreational.
Never became a problem?
No, never a problem.
Huh. Ben says that Dacha smells of poverty.
Well, I'd say Jatto definitely smells of poverty.
Okay,
and,
Jatto. Right.
Bad lungs.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, all right, I hope I cleared it up for you.
You have indeed. You're a genius.
It's
thank
also
you.
Called Majat.
Majat. All right. Yeah. Thanks, bro.
Okay.
There we go. We've all learned something now. C-Flex, that's what you got to do, is find out the origin of a term. Then you can help other people to make use of it. Titan says Jut is crap low-grade weed. Carl says Jut is poor quality weed.
Oh.
Anushka says, no, Flex, the song was made for hell. What is this? No, man. So, yeah, let's play the Bieber song so that Mubs can get a feeling for what we're talking about here. I think this is probably my favorite Bieber song ever.
This song was co-written with Ed Sheeran.
Hmm.
Now, Ed Sheeran writes these sad love songs all because Rita Ora screwed him over like 6 years ago.
I didn't know that. In all the clubs you get in using my name. I mean, listen to the lyrics, right? You think you broke my heart, oh girl, for goodness sake. You think I'm crying on my own, well, I ain't. So far, it's like I'm fine. I'm fine without you. You used my name to get into clubs. You rain on my parade. He's not being nice. And then you're telling me that the central lyric is going to be love yourself? It's fuck yourself, I'm telling you. And I didn't want to write a song because I didn't want anyone thinking I still care or don't. I don't care, right? You still hit my phone up. And you still hit my phone up? Baby, I'll be moving on. And I think it should be something I don't want to hold back. Maybe you should know that. And then he says, my mama don't like you, and she likes everyone. And I never liked to admit that I was wrong. And I've been so caught up in my job, didn't see what's going on, but now I know. Here it comes, you ready, Mubs? I'm better sleeping on my own, cause if you like the way you look that much, oh baby, you should go and fuck yourself. I'm telling you, that's right. And if you think that I'm still holding. And if you think it's love, you're missing the whole point. This is like English comprehension. You know when you get a Shakespeare poem and you have to figure out what it really means? I'm telling you, in comprehension terms, basic poetry and prose, you could tell what he means here. He means the opposite. It's irony.
I think Rita Ora could be the key to a musician's success.
What do you mean?
I've just gone through her dating history.
Okay.
In 2009, Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Bruno Mars, 2009 to 2011.
Okay.
Bruno Mars writes the, mm-hmm. like, what's that song, If I Was Your Man?
Yeah,
sad
yeah,
love song.
Sure.
ASAP Rocky, he's mm-hmm. got effing problems.
Right.
Who else do we have here? Aubrey Graham, I don't know that.
No, clearly that one didn't work.
Rob Kardashian messed up his life.
Well, thank goodness he doesn't write songs.
Calvin Harris, great musician.
Great, yeah.
Ed Sheeran.
Right.
Made that love song about
right.
her.
Right.
I don't know who Ricky Hill is.
No, nobody does. Next one.
This
woman's had a hell of a history.
Yes.
You're saying she's got a vagina like a paku fish. That's what it comes down to.
Michael, you do know that Aubrey Graham is Drake, right?
Oh, yes. Aubrey Graham is Drake. And Drake's got all those sad love
Aubrey
songs.
Aubrey Graham is Drake and you didn't
That's
know that.
I forgot Aubrey. Well, oh, I knew wow. him as Aubrey.
He's your favorite rapper and you didn't know his name is Aubrey Drake. Well, what's Snoop Dogg? What's Snoop Dogg's name?
I don't know.
Calvin Broadus. See, I know that.
I think the worst first name has to be The Weeknd's real name.
What's The Weeknd's real name?
Monday.
Abel.
Hey, is Sophie Ndaba coming?
Yeah, she's just stuck in a bit of traffic around the corner.
All right. Now that Flex mentioned it, it does sound like an Ed Sheeran song. That's probably why it did so well. And Tyrell says, Jut is shit weed. And then Chinsia says, listening to Cliff Central now on the app, it's totally supposed to be F yourself. I thought it was just a radio edit. There we go. I'm telling you. I discovered this the other day while listening to it. But it is a good song. Admit that, Ben.
No.
Oh, come on, Mubs.
I mean, this is the thing with music is you like some things and then you hate other things and it's perfectly fine.
You know what? You should go and fuck yourself. How about that?
We don't all have to love Justin Bieber.
How about this? I know what you'll love.
Plan, though.
That's not my plan. Come on, get off of it. I like all music. You know that. I even like Mary Poppins doing death metal.
Oh, God.
Are you ready?
Uh-oh.
Yes!
Yeah.
that. Would you have her as your nanny? And they've actually went in the music video for this, they've dubbed her in, so you see what's her name, from Sound of Music, man,
Julie Andrews,
who plays Mary Poppins, and she's actually there going supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It's fantastic. Okay, we got to take a break because we got to get the podcasts up, and we'll come back with Sophie Ndaba, and we'll take your calls, 0861-555-189. I still have lots of other stuff I would have got to, but we'll see if we've got some time for that when Sophie comes in a little bit later on. All right, you know what to do. Give us a call, 0861-555-189.
CliffCentral.com.